Well, now, ladies and gentlemen, we're certain that you're going to enjoy meeting our guest today. He's got quite a story to tell about growing up in the Depression, about the jobs he had to take, about the things he had to do. I know it worked out pretty well, but it's quite a story, and I repeat that I think you're going to enjoy listening to it. His name is Mr. Jean-Marie Bidal. Well, now, Mr. Bidal, when did you retire from Inco?
September the 1st, 1975.
Right. Well, that's not too long ago. And what type of work were you doing when you retired, Mr. Bidal?
I was a skimmer in the converter building.
Okay. Now, I gather that you were born in Montreal, but that you were taken to Sturgeon Falls is when you were quite young. Is that correct?
That's right.
Well, you'd be taken there by your family. Tell us something about your father now. Where was he born?
My father was born in France in 1878, and he moved down to Montreal at the age of 16. That would say 1894. And he worked in Montreal for 3 years. He worked unloading boats at the harbor. And beside that, for a while, he was a coachman driving horses for a senator in Montreal. After that, he put in 10 years with McDonald Tobacco in Montreal. And he says, anybody chew tobacco, he never seen them made it. And after that, he went and worked for the CBR as a moldman, making train wheels. He was there for 10 years when he quit and bought a farm down in Sturgeon Falls. And
well, how about, that's a great summary and a great rundown, and you must be very proud of your father, I would say.
I guess I really am.
Yes,
for a man that was raised, would say, at the age of 16, when most kids need their parents, he was all alone, and he made his life all alone, and he's a man I'm very proud of.
Yes, I can tell that you are, and I admire you for it. And he just took off from his native village or whatever it was in France, came to Canada, and made the best of things, eh?
Yeah.
Well, good for him. Now, let's pick it up then about the point where you go to Sturgeon Falls. You then would grow up on the farm in that area, eh?
That's right.
Well, now, what are some of your earliest memories of growing up on that farm?
Well, there's one thing there. When I was 2.5 years old, I remember one of our horses fell in the well we had behind the barn for the cattle, and he fell backward in there. And although I don't remember seeing the horse in the well, I remember my uncle had a big team of horses, black, Tom and Jack, they called them, and they hooked cable and pulleys on the barn, and I remember seeing that team pulling the horse from the well.
That's an early mirror. I'll say that. And you also tell me that you, incidentally, what year were you born, Mr. Bidal?
1913.
Ah, yes. So, at the end of the war, then, you'd be about 6 years old or something like that, eh? You remember the end of the war, right?
I really remember the end of the war. I was in the garden with my dad, because my dad was a real gardener. And we were digging the cabbages to put in for the winter, when the whistles and the mill and the church bell and the school bell and everybody, all the bells were ringing, you know, for the end of the war.
Great. But now, I'm trying to think more in terms of growing up, like with your brothers and sisters and so on. You were sort of the middle man, the middle boy or child of a pretty large family. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, we were 11 kids, although we could say that only six at a time that were survived for any number of years.
Well, now, would you have to do your share of work around the farm in terms of...
I really did. I remember milking cows, you know. I wouldn't say me 8 or 10 cows, but a couple of cows, you know, at the age between 8 and 9.
That's work.
And then we used to, Saturday, there was the cleaning of the stable, because my dad, besides working the farm, was working at the mill on shift work. And we had to do our share.
Oh, great. You know, you didn't have it too easy then, growing up, eh?
Not.
You learned. You learned how to work as a young fellow, eh?
But we still had time to play, and...
Great. Well, now, Sturgeon Falls would be pretty much a French community about that time, eh?
Oh, I would say 85% at the time, yeah.
So you would go to school, a French school, eh?
Well, we shouldn't say a French school exactly, because we were still... reading in English and taking arithmetic in English, you know.
Oh, were you? I didn't
realize
that.
Oh, yes, we did that. Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah. Until 1929, when they established that it was lawful to get English and French, you know, at the entrance examination. That's the year I went through the entrance examination in English and French. That was the first year.
Well, I don't know anything about the details of that in Ontario here, but that's the way that worked out. So you learned 2 and 2 make 4 and multiplication tables in English as well as French then, did you? Or?
No, it didn't work like that. We used to take English composition and English, geography was in English, and we had the history of England, and... Canadian history was in French, and this was in English. And we used to take both of them.
Well, that didn't do you any harm. I mean, I bet...
I guess not, because we learned more in geography, you know, about the other countries, and, you know, and history than they're learning today.
Well, I know that you're active and interested in school politics, and we're going to talk about that again in a minute. And that brings up a favorite... thing of mine, a thing that gets in my hair, Mr. Bedal, and I, as we were getting ready for the show, you agreed with me. I say on this show, and I said on earlier shows, I didn't like this funny way of, I don't know whether they're still doing it, of teaching English, in which they don't teach any phonetics. They make you learn the whole word.
Yeah.
Now, did they put that newfangled funny way of teaching French in or not?
Oh, they do that now too in French.
They have the sort of the new,
new
learning
about
in French
the same,
as well as English, eh?
Yeah.
I'm against it. Maybe you and I both better get elected to some kind of a school board, eh?
Yeah, well, the thing is, even if we didn't like it, there's not much we can do now, you know, because if you have there's so many educated people now that thinks that this is the thing.
Yeah.
That even if the older people, you know, that don't believe in that would go back and try to change that, I don't believe it would be possible to be done.
Well, I got more hope than that. I read somewhere that the man who introduced it in the first place is beginning to have some doubts about it.
Yeah.
I recall that my own family, my children at that time, they were learning this new English or whatever it is, new way of reading. And they'd look at a word, as I said, like sheep or something, and they'd call it cow, because they hadn't learned the whole word.
That's right.
So when that happened, I took them home and I said, forget it, and we started to learn cat and rat and fat and mat. And in a matter of a month or more, they were reading the daily paper and anything else. I think children can learn, and learn fast, if you teach them the right way, eh?
Well, the thing is, like me, I can't say too much, you know, sometimes, because... I have, at one time, you know, I had about 30 relatives, you know, in the teaching profession.
Oh, you got to take it a little easy then here, I guess.
So, I don't want to...
All right. Look, let me take all the responsibility for this, Mr. Bedal.
No, I don't think they'll... They know the way I feel, and...
They won't take it too much to heart, then, eh? Okay, so, when you finish school, you would finish school about smack dab in the middle of the Depression, is that correct?
No, I finished school in 29. That's the beginning of the Depression.
That's what I said, yeah, just at the start of it, eh?
Yeah.
And so, and incidentally, you had hoped to be a school teacher, I take it.
That's right.
But Depression was Depression, the father, the big crash, You had to quit school and go to work, right?
I had to quit school and go to work for the Banca Nazionale San Island, Sturgeon Fall. I stayed there 5 years.
Well, and what did you do at the end of the 5 years there?
After 5 years with the bank, of course, there was a little argument there, although I didn't get fired, but the manager had promised me a job as a teller, because the teller was a well-to-do man, and the teller was supposed to quit, and I was supposed to get his job. And the manager died, a new manager was appointed, and when the teller quit, they transfer a man from another branch to Sturgeon Fall, and I didn't get the job, so I quit. And I went and stayed in Hanmer with my brother and worked there for 1 year.
Well, good for you. I mean, you weren't going to sit still for that one,
I guess,
eh?
Not.
You know, it's funny how little things influence our life. If you had stayed there, if that hadn't happened, you might still be with the bank, eh?
I would be retired now, too.
You'd be retired,
I would have quite a bit of service now. Probably 50 years now.
But it'd have been a different life,
years.
Wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yep.
It was a nice job, but...
Sure. Yeah. But you knew what you would take and what you wouldn't, eh?
Yeah.
So what were you doing with your brother? It was in Hanmer, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, he had the general store there, and I worked there for 1 year. And during Depression, well, things were a little quiet, you know, so I decided to try something else. And then I moved to Coniston, and I went and worked for the CBR for 1 month. And that was a hard job, you know, putting in railroad ties and rails. I decided at that time maybe it was, I might as well die and work like that.
you weren't a big man. What was your weight be about?
I weighed between 135 and 138 at the time.
This wasn't your kind of work then. This is for big, strong fellas.
Oh, yeah.
Right? All right.
That's right.
And however, you stuck it out for a month at that, and then you went where?
I went to work for J.S. Jeans and Son, which had a general store there, and I worked as a butcher there for 6 months.
Well, now, year are we talking now?
Now we're talking year 1930. I would say 1934, 35. Yeah, 35.
Maybe there's some fellas listening, or some ladies and gentlemen listening, who may have served them, eh?
I meet lots of those people there in.
Sure, yeah.
In Coniston. At that time, I knew everybody in Coniston.
I guess you went as a butcher there, eh?
Yeah.
Well, great. Maybe some of them will give you a call. I hope they do.
Well, I'd like it then.
If they hear the broadcast. Now, then what happened? You left the butcher shop.
I left the butcher shop, and I went to work in Wanapatay in a grocery store there. And for a Finlander by the name of Charlie Jacobson, a very fine gentleman. And I didn't learn how to speak Finn, though.
No.
I knew some words, but I knew how to take a steam back.
All right.
Yeah.
And also
and,
you'd
he had a lumber yard there,
uh-huh.
And we were lumbering at the same time, so I was a jack of all trades. When it was, they didn't require me, you know, sometime in the store, well then, I drove the truck, I scaled lumber, I scaled logs, I walked bushes, you know, to try to find out how many thousand feet so we could buy some kind of a small limit.
Right.
And...
Well, in other words, you did what you had to do, eh? And I guess these are pretty good years, eh? A young fellow working in the store, they're pretty happy.
At the time, I didn't worry at all, you know. The wages were not big, but I was getting along during Depression years and...
Would you be speaking English by this time?
Oh, yeah.
You had picked it up, I guess.
Oh, yeah, I picked up English. I could speak English, would say, when I was 12, 13 or something like that. But after I went to normal school there in Sturgeon for 2 years, going in for a school teacher, well, then we had to pass examination in English as much as in French.
Oh, yeah.
So,
you picked it up, eh?
Of course, I still make mistakes in English, you know.
Well,
because,
yes, you should hear my mistakes in French. So let's not worry about that. Now, then your friend, the Finlander, sold his store, did he not?
That's right. He sold the store, and he moved at the Lively Corner, because he had a lot and he built himself a store over there. And I started a little business, grocery business, in Wanapate at that time.
Well, how'd you get along?
Well, business was good, but during the war, everybody would remember, you know, that the pay came only once a month, you know, for the ladies whose husband was in the war. And it was pretty hard for a guy that started with nothing, you know, to fill the shelves, you know, with groceries. So first I took in a job, you know, in 1941, making census for the government, figuring I'd make a little money, you know, to help out. But I landed out, you know, going in the bush.
In the hole, right?
So after that, one guy come to me, he wanted me to take him, you know, to Falconbridge for a job. He heard, you know, they were hiring. So I went over there, take him over there, and I tried with myself when I went over there, and no, they didn't want nobody. So he said, will you take me to Inco? I says, okay. So he, while he was in there, I says, I might as well try myself.
Yeah.
I went in there and they hired me right away and they sent me to Coniston to work.
Well, how about that? Isn't it, you know, when you got up that morning, you had no idea you'd be working for Inco that night, eh?
Oh, no, never, never.
It's
I started
those,
right away.
One of those little crossroads in life, eh?
Yeah.
I bet there are lots of people listening who know exactly what we're talking about, who can affect your whole life and everything, eh?
So that's the time after putting my checks, you know, buying groceries to let the people buy on credit. I figured, you know, the checks from Inco were too nice, you know, to do a thing like that. I could do a better living, you know, just working for Inco.
Of course.
So I got rid of the business, you know, and moved to Coniston.
Now, also, another important event happened around about 1939, involving a young lady from St. Charles.
Oh, yeah.
What was her name?
Elvina DeForge.
Right. And where did you meet her?
Well, I meet her, you know, we were singing in church, you know, and she was singing in the choir. And started to talk, and a couple of times we went skating, you know, first thing you know, in 1939, you know.
You got yourself
married,
We got
married in October 1939.
good. Very, very good. So now, what family have you now, Mr. Vidal?
Now I have three boys and three girls.
Where are they now, and what are they doing?
So, my son, Raymond, the oldest one, he's a mechanic with the construction gang at Inco. And my second son, he's a surveyor with Falconbridge Nickel Mine. And my third son, Ferna, he's manager of the Caisse Populaire in Coniston. Prior to that, he was a government assessor.
Okay, now the girls.
And Rochelle, she's married to Jean-Marie Comeau. He's a surveyor for Falconbridge Nickel Mine, and she's a teacher at a separate school in Coniston. And Yvette, the second daughter, she's not married. She's still home, taking a course in hairdressing.
Right.
And the other daughter, Marie-Claire, she's a school teacher, too. She teaches at the Lively Bilingual Separate School. She's married to Armand Gagné. Armand Gagné, he works for the Chelmsford Pharmacy.
Right. Well, now, sir, we have this fine family growing up, and here were you. You had wanted to be a school teacher, and depression and hard times had stopped that, but you've since that time taken quite an interest in school affairs, school politics, is that true, sir?
I certainly did, yeah.
Were you not on the school board in Coniston for quite a while?
25 years in Coniston and about 4 years in Wanapate. And beside that, I put in 9 years on the continuation school board in Coniston, which at the time it was something like a high school. But
right. Well, now, you're at the moment, you're not actively in any elected office as far as schools are concerned, eh?
No.
I gather that you've toy with the idea, but you're just not too sure. Is that right?
Well, I'm not too sure, but I'd like to go back on school.
It might happen, eh?
It could happen.
He's like the old war horse. You're smelling the battle or something here, right?
Yeah.
Well, now, Mr. Bidal, another thing that you mentioned earlier, we were getting ready for the show, was a trip you made last September. Now, where was that? A trip overseas?
Oh, yeah. September after I took my retirement, we decided to go to France to visit the land where my dad was born. And we flew from Montreal, we flew to Paris, and from Paris we took the train to Lyon. And then we rented a car there, and we traveled 1,500 miles through the southern part of France. We visited the homeland where my dad was born. We met some cousins and second cousins, and we didn't know them, and we knew they exist, but we never wrote to them or nothing, and we met them. They were very happy, and so were we.
A nice feeling, too.
Oh, that was, it was a funny feeling. It was really touchy, because especially one of my cousins there, you know, he's just like the image of my father, and really have a great impression on me.
Great. Well, you enjoyed it. Now, what impressed you about the country that you saw? You were telling me about how it was all carefully cultivated.
Yeah. They don't lose no ground at all. Every little piece of land is cultivated. And even on top of the mountains, it's so high sometimes when you look at those grapes or fruit trees on top of the mountain there. And then we learn all about the winemaking and why someplace they grow green grapes, some other place they grow red grapes. Or blue grapes.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Depending on the soil and the climate, I guess. Eh?
Oh, yeah. It's,
well, that's the... Now, another comment you made that I found interesting is you liked the people. You said that they knew how to live over there.
Well, they knew how to live, yeah.
Took life a little easier?
Yeah, they're taking life very easy. And their social life may be a little less than we have over here. But they seem very, very happy, and they do their work, they come home, and it's more of a family life than we have, we'd say, over here.
That's great. What about things like television and so on? Do they sit and look at television?
Oh, yeah, they have television over there, and, oh, yeah, they... I would say, first when I went over there, I figured, you know, that it was very backward, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I found out that they have dishwashers and
all
the furnace. Although they don't, they don't eat the house. It's very cold.
All that.
They're used to that, I imagine, or something, you know. And it's if you get the damp days, the fire don't go on. If they got furnace there, they might light the furnace when it's cold in the winter, I don't know.
What do they burn, oil or coal?
Oh, yeah, some burn oils, gas, or...
Yeah, you're talking the south of France now, are
you? Yeah, I would say that's around the, close to the border of Lake Geneva, we used to call Lake Geneva.
Of course, it never gets quite that cold. It doesn't get as cold over there as here.
No, they get snow, but it don't stay.
Well, now, sir, we touched on this a little earlier, that politically you're not too sure whether you're going to get back into the ring on a political basis or not, eh?
Well, maybe on school affair, but on the other, I don't think I'll get involved. I like to work on politics because I'm very much interested.
Now, and, all right, sir, now, your wife, we haven't talked a great deal about her. She hasn't been too well, you tell me, but... She's active enough to take part in church affairs, things like that?
Oh, yeah. And I forgot to mention, you know, that she's a wonderful cook, you know.
Yeah,
and that's why maybe she can't be too active outside, because if it's Friday night, she's going to make some beans. She makes the bean for the whole family. And so she hasn't got too much time to go out.
I bet she likes that, too.
Oh, yeah, she's a good cook.
Pretty close-knit family, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And you and all the grandchildren, eh?
Yeah.
Well, finally, to pack it up here, sir, you tell me that, depending upon your wife's health or how things work out, you might like to take a trip maybe west or something. Is that right?
I'd like to take a trip out west, visit Vancouver, and if But by car, not by plane. I'd like to visit the whole West. I was down the East Coast before, a couple of years back, and I want to go to the West Coast.
That's a long way, mind you.
When you've got lots of time, you take
it doesn't
time.
Matter, eh? All right, thank you very much. Friends, our guest today, Mr. Jean-Marie Bidal, who retired in September of 1975, that retired from Inco then, after 34 years with the company. He was a skimmer.
Great company.
Pardon me?
A great company.
A great company, eh? Well, you heard Mr. Bidal. And I thank you, sir, very much for being our guest and coming to visit with us on Memories and Music.
Thank you.